The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, and I tell you what, it is hard to believe the college football season is starting to wind down, and I cannot think of a better way to bid farewell to the Nebraska Cornhuskers as they prepare to head off to the Big Ten Conference next year than an epic battle of the Big Reds with their longtime rival, the Oklahoma Sooners. And I can promise you, right here in Arlington, it is going to be rocking inside the Cowboys Stadium. Always a pleasure to welcome into our program, who joins us every week with our Under the Helmet segment, Jason Peter, three-time national champion. He doesn't need any introduction, but let me share that he was a part of the dynasty with Tom Osborne and was a part of those three national championships. It's incredible. It's a great story. Jason, what a great way to have you on this weekend.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. This is it. The final Big 12 game, and comes down to two historic programs and tradition rich, and you know, the list goes on with the number of all-stars that have played in this game, and what a fitting way for the conference to come to an end.
Well, it's the perfect script. It's the perfect setup. And as you talked about, Jason, a historic game between two rivals that you've mentioned it so many times on our program, you know, just the amount of respect that they have for each other. But who knew that the last hurrah would not be in Lincoln or Norman, but it would be right here in Arlington, Texas.
Yeah, and I'm sure if Nebraska loses this game, everyone's going to be saying, well, it's because we played a road game, and Oklahoma's closer to Arlington, and this and that. And, you know, the truth is it's going to be a crazy environment, and Nebraska's going to have fans there, and Oklahoma's going to have fans there. But, you know, for a game that goes under, you know, I think the heading of a rivalry game, even though it hasn't been a true rivalry the last few years, you got two teams that are playing, it seems like, for more than just the game this year. Knowing that, you know, you're not going to see each other every 2 years for a home-and-home series. Knowing that this is kind of the end. I know they're talking about maybe getting together down in 2020 or something like that. But, you know, for now, this is it. This is the end. And you're kind of the current players, they're playing for all of the former guys that have come through the doors and either worn the Oklahoma jersey or the Nebraska jersey. So I cannot wait for this game to happen.
Well, you're right on. I mean, there's so much history, nostalgia. You know, I read somewhere, you know, this game marks the end of an era. I mean, 90 years that the Sooners and the Huskers, that they have competed in the same conference. One of the things that we've talked about and discussed greatly is, you know, really the Big 12, how it really eroded the rivalry. You've been very candid about that.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that if they had kind of circled the Nebraska-Oklahoma game instead of the Nebraska-Texas game, that the Big 12 would still be intact. I would like to think that I know Coach Osborne a little bit, and I know how much this game has meant to him. I mean, you go back and, you know, just the head-to-head battle between himself and Barry Switzer, and certainly Switzer had the better end of it. But it was a game that meant a lot to Coach Osborne, and I think he realized how much it meant to the fans as well. And if they had said, all right, this is our marquee game of the year in the Big 12, Nebraska, Oklahoma, I don't know if Coach Osborne would have left. I think he would have said there's got to be a way to figure it out, because people look forward to football season, but you know, more in particular, they look forward to Nebraska, Oklahoma every year. And when that was taken away, Nebraska was kind of left without a true rival. And, you know, Nebraska's too big of a program to not have a true rival from within the conference.
What are some of your memories as a player? I mean, here you describe and talk about just how, you know, this was so special to, you know, Coach Osborne, but and so many terrific wars between him and Barry Switzer. But as a player, I mean, how meaningful was this particular game to you?
Well, back when I was playing in those mid-90s, it was there were some down years there for Oklahoma, but we always knew, and it was something that Coach Osborne and Charlie McBride and all the assistant coaches would say, that it doesn't matter what the record is going into this game. You could throw it away because you knew that Oklahoma was going to give everything they got. And, you know, for the most part, that held true. There was a couple of games where it got out of hand. But you're also talking about some of the greatest teams that have played in college football. I mean, a bunch of those teams were national championship teams that Nebraska had during that time period. But, you know, I remember Brian Bosworth and, you know, the guys like that, Tony Casillas, and watching those guys as a little kid. And growing up on the East Coast in New Jersey, it's not that college football is that big out here. I mean, the biggest program we got is Rutgers, and I can guarantee you back in the late 70s and 80s, they were not standing up saying, hey, watch our program. I mean, it's NFL country out here. But I still remember as a kid seeing, you know, Brian Bosworth out there on the field in the Mohawk, and he was this magnetic figure, and he certainly faced some controversy there at the end, but, you know, Sooner Magic, and it's just stuff. Jamal Holloway, I mean, you can go on, and the Selman brothers, and, you know, as a Nebraska guy, you think that, well, you only know stuff about your own program, but when you're talking about Oklahoma, and if you're a player at Nebraska, you knew what Oklahoma did, you know what they had, you know what they're going to be, and that was just the mutual respect between both programs.
Reliving some great memories, some Big 8 memories there with Jason Peter. It is our Big 12 title game show, just like old times. Oklahoma, Nebraska, they're going to decide the Big 12 conference title. I think one of the interesting storylines too, JP, is the Midwest storyline between the coaches, the fact that Nebraska coach Bo Pelini is a Youngstown, Ohio native, and so is the Sooners coach Stoops.
Yeah, they're both Cardinal Mooney guys, and, you know, what a coincidence. I mean, that just goes to show the work ethic that those guys were raised with, and, you know, it reminds me a lot. You hear stories about these guys, how, you know, they grew up in the same neighborhood, and they played in the same kind of backyard football games, and all the brothers kind of got into coaching. I know one of the Pelini brothers, I believe, is still the head coach at Cardinal Mooney, or maybe it's vice versa, maybe one of the Stoops brothers. There's so many of these kids, it's hard to keep track, but yeah, I mean, two guys from the same neighborhood end up, you know, getting into college football, and one's the head coach of Oklahoma, and the other one's the head coach of Nebraska. I don't know if that will ever happen again in any town across the country where you have two guys like that, but hard work and a work ethic, like I said, and that reflects onto their team. I think when you look at both of these programs, that's kind of how they've built their way to the top is through hard work, and certainly you need some star guys, and Oklahoma probably has the edge when it comes to recruiting and being a little closer to the Texas borderline, but you know, they both look for character guys, I think, and guys that are willing to go out and empty the tank on every single play.
We're breaking it all down for you this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, getting you guys set and ready for the Big 12 title game. JP, let's start with your Huskers. What are the keys for the Huskers in this particular game? And a lot of questions swirling around with your quarterback situation. Will redshirt freshman Taylor Martinez, what's his status, and is he going to start?
Your guess is as good as mine. Bo Pelini's come out and said that you'll find out on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Whether or not he knows the starter, I'm sure he's got a good idea. But I think preparing for Cody Green and preparing for Taylor Martinez, if you're Oklahoma, is two different things. You know, with Cody Green, it's going to be more of a managing the football game type deal, and you know, hand the ball off here and there. Maybe they're going to run some wildcat with Rex Burkhead. They'll ask him to throw, you know, occasionally on first or second down, but most of the times it will probably be if needed type situation. If it's third and six and they got to get the ball down the field to move the chains. So, you know, when you talk about Cody Green, it's nothing like preparing for Taylor Martinez. He's a guy that is so explosive with his legs. You know, they talk about him being a proven thrower. I think we're all still kind of waiting to see that. Through the first four, five, six games of the season, he was electrifying. I mean, he had people standing for the offensive series. They couldn't wait to see what this kid did next. But then he kind of hit a slump there a little bit, got benched for, you know, half of a game, then got injured, and certainly has not been the same quarterback since he's been injured. And, you know, there's been some talk of maybe, you know, there's some problems from within the locker room, and you're hearing that maybe the guys kind of rally a little bit more around Cody Green. Whatever the case is, whichever quarterback is out there, I think Nebraska, in order to win this game, they've got to be more physical on the line of scrimmage, and that's both offense and defense. And you hear it all the time that if you're going to win the game, you got to win up front. And I think it's going to hold true in this game. For Nebraska to win this game, I think they're going to have that kind of grinded out, that 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, if Martinez is in there, then, you know, if he's healthy enough, maybe you get a 30-yard gain or a 40-yard play here or there, but you can't count on it. You know, they're going to have to take care of the football. They've been kind of lazy with that, putting the ball on the ground. In a game like this, playing against an offense like Oklahoma has, and when they're hitting on all cylinders, they're one of the best in the country. You can't give them any more opportunities than they already have coming in terms of how many possessions they get. So Nebraska has to hold on to the football. They've got to be disciplined. They can't have these personal fouls. And I know there's the whole conspiracy theory against Nebraska, and Dan Beebe has instructed the referees at the start of the season to make it hard for Nebraska and make sure that they don't walk out carrying the last Big 12 trophy. I'm not a believer in those conspiracy theories. They've just been undisciplined and lazy, and you know, that reflects on some of the games that they've played. But you know, those are some of the things that I think Nebraska has to do. Like I said, they got to be disciplined, and they got to take care of the football. They got to be physical, and you know, hopefully things will go their way.
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. We are breaking down the Big 12 title game, zeroing in on his Nebraska Cornhuskers right now. I want to back up for just a moment and talk some more about this redshirt freshman quarterback in Taylor Martinez. We're unsure, you know, what is going to happen, whether or not he will start. You know, he has been, as you had used the word, electrifying. I mean, a great adjective. I mean, he's just been so fantastic when he is out there and he is healthy. Obviously, he's physically gifted, but what about mentally? I mean, is he pretty immature?
Well, that's some of the stuff that we're hearing. I mean, this was a kid that transferred high schools three different times. And I know sometimes there are some overbearing parents, some fathers out there that you know, send their kid to one school and you know, maybe he doesn't get the starting job, or maybe he doesn't throw for as many yards as he thought. Well, the father takes him out of that school because he says the offense isn't right for him. I mean, are you kidding me? We're picking schools for these high school kids based upon what offense suits them best. You know, college scouts and coaches, if there's a talented player there, they'll find him no matter what type of offense you're running. But I think it is a bad sign to see that a kid is transferred that many times. You know, it's something that I think will stick with you for the rest of your life. And whether or not that's happening now up here at Nebraska, I mean, only time will tell. Certainly nothing's been released about Taylor transferring. In fact, Bo has had to come out a week or so ago and say that, you know, he's still on the team, and everything that, you know, the bloggers or the message boards are saying is false. But, you know, that's not, I guess, denying the fact that there's rumors that he is kind of a loner, you know, not that guy to kind of rally the troops. He made a statement after the Kansas game a few weeks back where he said, you know, I played in this game because this was his first game back after the ankle injury. I guess a reporter had asked him if he felt pressure to play in the game, and he came out and said, I played in this game because I needed to make sure everybody knew that this was my team and nobody else's team. Now, when you're a redshirt freshman, I'm sorry. You don't come out and say that. You just shut your mouth and you do your job. Yeah, you're the quarterback. Yeah, there has to be some sort of leadership character in you. But coming out and saying that this team is your team and nobody else's team, you got to slow your roll down and back that truck up, because you know, just because you had a few good games doesn't mean you're Tommy Frazier or you're Turner Gill or Scott Frost or Eric Crouch or guys like that, because you know, you got to kind of earn the right, I think, to use words like that.
Okay, one of the things, since we're on the topic of offense for Nebraska, talk to us a little bit more about, as far as the running back, Rex Burkhead, because this sophomore, he really, in many ways, has become the heart and soul of a team when they have been looking for that leadership at the QB position.
Yeah, and I remember when they recruited him, he had a cult-like following that followed him from Texas. I think he was one of the state player of the year. I'm not sure what level or division, but you know, there were all the YouTube clips of him, and you know, 30,000-50,000 hits, 100,000 hits, and you know, it caught on quick up here too. And he's you know, I was skeptical in the beginning. He's a guy that's a little short on height. He's not as big as some of these other backs. But I'll tell you what, with his work ethic, he's won me over. He's just a guy who the legs just don't stop. And just because there are two guys that are hanging on him and tackling him and trying to push him the other way, that doesn't mean that he's turning off the engine on that play. I mean, he just continues to fight and fight and fight. And he's that blue-collar type guy. You know, the guy that nobody expects, I guess, when you look at the cover of the book, but you open that book up and it's a heck of a read, and that's how Rex has been. And you know, they're going to do some things where he'll line up in as the eye back, and he'll take some handoffs here and there, but then he'll also line up in that wildcat and he'll take the direct snap. And I think when you have Rex and Roy Helu Jr. back there as the double threat, that's going to be a difficult thing for Oklahoma to stop. Just because it's hard, which one do you key on? You know, I think he ran some of that wildcat when he was in high school, so it's not a matter of him feeling comfortable with the ball and whether he hands it off or whether he keeps it. That's something that he's been doing for a long time. So you know, he threw his first touchdown pass at the collegiate level a game or so ago, and I think he's a throwing threat as well. So that's something that Oklahoma, I think, has to prepare for, and something that I think Nebraska will certainly try to use to their benefit.
Certainly is nice to have that type of versatility. We've hit on Nebraska's offense. Let's shift avenues, talk about the meat and potatoes of this program, and that is the Nebraska defense. What are your thoughts? I mean, the black shirts certainly are going to have to come out and put on a clinic.
Yeah, I'm glad you referred to the black shirts as the meat and potatoes, because there's been so much talk of the offense, and I tell everybody, let's not kid ourselves here, all right? The day that Bo walked in here, the day that Tom Osborne named Bo Pelini head coach, it wasn't necessarily because he had such a great offensive mind or he knew exactly what he wanted to do on offense. It was because he could put together 11 guys out there on that defensive side of the ball that could go out and keep you in a football game. And you know, there hasn't been many times other than down in Norman his first year where it got ugly real fast, but that was a pretty darn good Oklahoma team led by Sam Bradford, and I think it was 24-0 before, you know, 6 minutes had ticked off the clock. And you know, other than that game, and maybe there was another game that kind of got out of hand, there really hasn't been any game that Nebraska has not been into until you know, the final minutes of the game, and that's what Tom Osborne was looking for. That's where Nebraska needed the most help when this job came available, and that's what Bo Pelini has provided. He's provided a great defense, and they go out and they play hard. And is it the best defense in the world? No. Do they have some trouble, I think, up front on the defensive line, and more in particular, kind of dealing with that inside running game and that cutback? Yeah, they do. But I think what you'll see out there, especially in terms of that secondary, I don't know if there's a better secondary in the country. You got two corners that can match up with pretty much anybody, and Prince Amukamara, who was the Defensive Player of the Year, and the other kid is Alfonso Dennard, who I think might be a better player than Amukamara when it's all said and done, and he's just a junior. But you have, when you have two guys like that who can go out on an island and who can cover guys, and you don't have to worry about providing or adding an extra guy in coverage, and now you can bring extra guys to rush the quarterback, and now you can do different things when you have two lockdown corners like that, and that's what Bo Pelini has been blessed with here at Nebraska, and Marvin Sanders is a secondary coach. You got to tip your hat to him, because I thought last year the strength of the defense was the secondary. Certainly the defensive line got a lot of talk, and deservedly so, because they were pretty good as well. But I think the secondary has enabled them to do different things up front. And when you talk about this defense in particular, a guy that came out of nowhere, a junior college transfer who has been exceptional, and he probably would have been my vote for Defense Player of the Year in the Big 12, is Levante David. Just a guy that can run sideline to sideline, or he can stick his nose up in the middle and take on a pulling guard or a fullback with a full steam, just like a freight train. I mean, he'll step in there and he makes plays happen. So, overall, I think Bo's got a good defense, but have they been tested like they will on Saturday? That's the big question.
You talk about the junior college player and just the impact that he has made. Is Coach Bellini, I mean, is he the guy that likes to go out and recruit those junior college guys to come in and make an immediate impact?
No, I don't think that Nebraska has ever been a school that likes to get into the JCs. I think they've looked at it, I think, the same way that Tom Osborne used to. And he thought that, well, if a kid's at the JC, there's a reason why he's at the JC. And lots of times it's grades, lots of times it's attitude. And I think you can certainly go in and you can kind of cherry-pick a guy here or there. But when you talk about the way that Kansas State rebuilt their program, it was all junior college kids. And that's something that Nebraska, you don't ever want to get too deep into to JC kids, because you end up having to go back and replace that junior college kid that just left, because there's a separation there. I mean, you'd like to bring in freshmen where you can redshirt them and they all kind of groom together, and then there's another class following. Well, when you bring in a junior college kid, there's a spot there that normally would be taken by a freshman, where now there's a 2 or 3 year difference, and that affects depth. So it's never, I think, something that Nebraska wants to do. There's not a lot of junior colleges in Nebraska. They're mostly down in the southern states and Texas. Kansas has a pretty good junior college down there, but Nebraska's never been one to spend too much time at the junior colleges, but certainly with this kid, it was well worth it.
Hey, we're glad you're with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We are breaking down the Big 12 title game, the second half of our program. Bob Berry Jr. from Oklahoma City, he's going to be filling us in on the Sooners, giving us all the X's and O's. But right now at the forefront, we are talking about Jason Peters' Huskers. And I'm kind of curious, here Bo Pelini, he's in his third season. Last year, they were 10-4. This year, he's got him in the title game out of the North. Your assessment of the job that he's been able to do and the recruiting that he's been able to provide?
It's been pretty remarkable, because like I was talking about, when he took over this job, the defense was at a point where it was embarrassing, Alyssa. I mean, you're talking about, ranked 110 or 11 or 12 out of, 116 Division I teams or something like that. And when people talk about Nebraska, you're talking about the black shirts, and it was not necessarily a talent thing. It was an effort thing. And, they had just gotten to the point where, guys didn't run after ball carriers, or if it looked like the ball carrier was going to run out of bounds, well, then they said, I guess I don't have to get into this car crash right now. I don't have to hit him. I might as well save my body. And when you start playing under that mindset. I mean, forget about it. That's what you ended with is the teams that Bill Callahan had here. And that wasn't what Nebraska is about. And I think when you talk about the state itself, you're talking about hardworking, blue-collar farmers. And you know, a lot of these people, especially with you know, the turn in the economy, I mean, you have families that have to put second and third mortgages on their homes so that they can afford season tickets for this year. I mean, people identify themselves with the football program. And when you travel outside of the state of Nebraska, if you go to the East Coast or the West Coast and you have a Nebraska T-shirt on, or it's always a Nebraska football T-shirt. And when people know that you're from Nebraska, the first thing that they usually ask is how the Huskers going to be this year. And it's something that I think the Nebraska fan base and the population of Nebraska, I think they embrace it and they love it. So that was, I think, the first thing that Bo wanted to do was to make sure that he went out and found guys with good character and guys who maybe necessarily aren't what the NFL wants. Maybe it's a linebacker that's 6 feet tall. Maybe it's a defensive tackle that's 6'1". But he wanted guys that were willing to empty the tank on every single play, and those are the guys that they've continued to go after. Bo could care less whether he's a three-star guy or a five-star guy. When they turn on the video, they want to see guys that are running around making plays and you know, making hustle plays as well, and guys that just don't stop.
It'll be all about execution Saturday night. Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We do want to direct you to his website. That is jasonpeter.com. And since we are talking about websites, check out ours at eradiosports.com. This entire radio interview is going to be on our e-podcast page. Just quickly, as we wrap things up, I did want to get your thoughts on the NCAA ruling that Cam Newton is eligible. He was ineligible, what, on Monday, Tuesday, they reversed that decision, and he is going to play. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a joke. I think now they've opened a window here that, I can't go out and broker any deal as to what school I go to, but my father can. And now, I mean, the NCAA has got themselves in a predicament here, because what happens the next time? I mean, you know, you've got a guy here that is one of the faces of college football this year. And it's been tarnished with this whole, you know, pay-to-play type deal. And, you know, is it any different than what Reggie Bush did? I mean, Reggie Bush's father was involved, or stepfather was involved in the whole deal. I mean, they you know, took a house in San Diego that they certainly couldn't have made the payments on without the help of, you know, this the agent or the marketing guy that they were dealing with. And I think at some point you got to draw the line, and certainly you'd hope that a father wouldn't put his son's playing status or his eligibility in jeopardy. But with Cam Newton, you know, that's the case. And the sad thing is, like we've talked about before, is his father's a preacher. I mean, this is a guy who's supposed to live his life, you know, the way that God intended it for him to live it, and he's out there negotiating a deal for his son, knowing that it's against the rules. I mean, it's embarrassing on so many different levels. And now the NCAA basically saying that, well, since Cam supposedly didn't know about it, and that's a supposedly that I have a hard time buying into. You know, I don't see how the kid who's going on all these recruiting, Dad, why am I going to visit Mississippi State? I mean, you know, Florida wants me, or, you know, Oklahoma wants me to play. I'm going to go visit Mississippi State? I mean, come on.
Right. Cam Newton, there's no doubt that he was definitely dialed into all the workings and what was going on. Obviously, Cameron getting some bad advice and counsel. And it is, as you said, it's embarrassing. It's disappointing. I mean, this is your father. This is someone that's supposed to be, you know, providing you the best, you know, protection and advice, and obviously being misled in many ways. And I can certainly agree with you and see where USC, that they're going to be upset, because there is going to be a backlash in terms of when you talk about Reggie Bush's situation, because his parents' involvement, and perhaps does that, you know, leave a loophole for them?
Right. I mean, the only difference is that this story was broken, I guess, before, you know, whether payment was made or maybe there was, you know, something with Auburn that has yet to be revealed. I mean, who knows? But in terms of the Reggie Bush case, I mean, what if the NCAA had stepped in, I guess, before the payment had been made? I mean, does that change thing? Is it the timing thing or is it the principle type thing? Because I think it's about the action that he's actually going out and looking for it. You know, the same way that Reggie Bush's family did. They opened the door to that type of stuff. And, you know, the same thing with Cam Newton's father. And I just don't see the difference in the two. Maybe somebody needs to sit me down and explain it more, but I just don't see the difference. And we've kind of, you know, thrown the darts at the picture of Reggie Bush's face up on the dartboard, and he's, you know, what's wrong with college football, and he's been the scapegoat, I think, for all this stuff. But now we've got a guy who, what, we're all on Cam Newton's side saying, yeah, but he didn't know. It was his father's doing.
Well, what is so stunning, too, is we think about how long and drawn out it was, the whole process in terms of Reggie Bush and him being stripped of the Heisman and now having to vacate that. But what about in terms of, I mean, how quickly, you know, Cam Newton's eligibility, how did it get resolved so quickly? That's what's really remarkable.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think when you look at college football, if it was a case maybe happening in the Big East or the WAC or, you know, a different conference, maybe there wouldn't have been such a rush to figure this thing out, or maybe there wouldn't have been a rush to put a statement out. But you're talking about the SEC. You're talking about a team that, it's their starting quarterback, then they're probably going to play for a national championship. And, you know, it's a shame that I guess some schools or some conferences get treated differently than others. I mean, they're all kind of playing towards the same goal. Yes, some conferences make more. Some teams make more money than others. But this is the perfect year. I mean, you know, with Boise making their run, and I know everybody down in Texas in TCU country was thrilled with their loss, but you know, TCU as well making a run at it. I mean, are we at a point now where you got to say everybody's equal here? I mean, they're putting together quality football teams that can beat, you know, supposed great football teams in a supposedly great conference. So, certainly, I don't think the NCAA looks at everybody the same way, and I'm sure they wanted to do something quick, too, so it didn't turn into another Reggie Bush predicament.
Well, Jason, we are flat out of time. We will pick up this conversation next week, and also we'll be breaking down the Heisman. We're very curious to find out, as you are a Heisman voter, who you are going to pick and select, and we want to get your thoughts on that. And also, we didn't have an opportunity. We want to talk about TCU going and joining the Big East Conference. That's, I think, personally, a win-win situation. As we sign off, we want to ask you your prediction on Saturday night's game. Who will prevail in that particular game?
Oh, well, listen. Come on now. Are you actually going to ask me this? If I ask you, as a former Sooner, who you think was going to go and win the game, I would certainly not expect you to say Nebraska.
Well, there you go. But I will throw out, you know, a little stat, a little notable. The Sooners have won 3 of the last 4 meetings between the two schools. However, you guys took care of business last year in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you were able to win. So, I don't know. We'll just have to see how it all shakes itself out. This could be, you know, perhaps a defensive game and a low-scoring one.
Yeah. I think Nebraska, that's what they're hoping for. If Landry Jones and that offense gets up on that scoreboard quick with 2 scores, Nebraska right now, they're not built to come from behind. You know, there's really no big play capability when you look at that offense, and especially with a dinged up Taylor Martinez or no Taylor Martinez. They're not built like that to come from behind. So they're going to have to keep it close and kind of grind it out and hope that it comes down to the final minutes in the fourth quarter. And as a fan, I think we all would love to see a game like that. And, you know, the truth is, whether Nebraska wins or Oklahoma wins, it's a rivalry that there's a great respect between the programs. And I think all everybody wants to see is their team to go out and play hard. And let the chips fall where they may.
That's right. One of the most celebrated rivalries in all of college football, the showdown for the Big 12 Conference crown. And as you said, you know, ending the football rivalry in such a fitting fashion. Jason, always a pleasure and honor to have you on our program, and we look forward to catching up with you next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Bob Berry Jr. with the Sports Animal from Oklahoma City will be joining us momentarily.